us. Thank you for joining me today. You're here for another episode of It's All About Food. And today, we're here with two fabulous people who have both been on this program before, Chef AJ and Glenn Mercer. Chef AJ has followed a plant-exclusive diet for more than 5 decades. She was the host of the television series Healthy Living with Chef AJ, which aired on Foodie TV. She broadcasts Chef AJ Live daily on YouTube. AJ lives with her handsome vegan husband, Charles, and their rescue mutt, Bailey, near Palm Springs, California. In 2018, she was inducted into the Vegan Hall of Fame and is proud to say that her IQ is higher than her cholesterol. She can be reached at chefaj.com. And we also have Glenn Mercer, who has been a vegetarian for almost 50 years and a vegan for the last 30. He is a playwright and a screenwriter and the author or co-author of 11 books advocating the vegan diet, including Own Your Health, featuring Chef AJ's recipes. His latest book, Food is Climate, examines the climate emergency. He can be reached at glennmercer.com. Together, Chef AJ and Glenn Mercer have collaborated on the original Unprocessed, the 10th anniversary edition of Unprocessed, Own Your Health, and the best-selling The Secrets to Ultimate Weight Loss. Wow! You guys are awesome. Welcome.
Thank you. Just one slight clarification. I am no longer in Palm Springs. I moved to Lincoln, California, in Northern California.
Oh, there you go. I know where Lincoln is. That's near Sacramento.
It is. It's a suburb, 31 miles east. It's really
we
nice
used to call that Sacra Tomato a long time ago. Who remembers that?
They still do. But still I haven't seen the color green in over 3 years. So it's really nice to be here.
Oh, good. All right. Well, I'm very happy to see you both and speak with you both. And as we get started, I read the 10th anniversary edition of Unprocessed, and that must be very exciting because for so many reasons. I don't want to go too much into your background, Chef AJ, other than saying you've seen it all, you've done it all, you've been through a lot, and a lot of it hasn't been pretty. And a lot of it has been difficult and sad. I can't even imagine, but you share a lot of it. And I just want to say, I am so happy for you and that you are in the place you're in. You are beautiful and fabulous and doing wonderful work. And that's all that matters right now is right now. And right now is looking very good for you.
Thanks. I think about that movie. I forget what it was called. Was it called The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel? Where he kept saying, everything will be all right in the end. If it's not all right, it's not the end.
There you go. And Glenn, I don't know that you've suffered too much. Your life, as far as I know, it has been pretty good.
I've had my share of suffering.
Well, who hasn't? Life is about suffering.
Yeah.
And I like to say that nothing is fair. Whatever. We just do the best that we can. Or at least...
I've been a playwright. What? How could you suffer much more than being a playwright?
Right.
It's hard.
It is hard.
Or being a playwright living in Indiana.
Oof. Usta, as they say here in Wisconsin, where I am right now. Okay, so let's just jump into Unprocessed. I like that in your bio, AJ, it says plant-exclusive diet. Can we just, before we even get into the book, talk about that? Because I'm just mortified with the phrase plant-based and where it has gone.
I don't like it. And the thing is that the person that is my understanding that created it is the most wonderful person in the world, Dr. Colin Campbell. However, I find that plant-based is a very confusing term. And so because I've been vegan for 45 years, about 10 or 11 years ago, I started saying, no, I'm not plant-based. I'm plant exclusive, because if something is based on plants, well, that sure is better than being based on processed food or animal products. But you could say then I eat 51% of my calories from plants and 49% from junk food or animal products. And I don't feel it tells people really what you eat. It maybe tells you the majority of what you eat. And other people have said plant forward, plant predominant. I know that people want to inch people over, but man, if we want to save the planet, we can't be inching anymore. We got to like leap. And so plant exclusive is very, very, it tells people what it is. And of course I am vegan, but as you know, some people, like if I'm speaking at places that aren't vegan, they don't like the V word, but plant exclusive. It sounds great because people want to be exclusive, don't they?
I like that. I haven't seen plant exclusive before. I think I've seen just about all the others. I like to say I follow a plant diet, but I like exclusive.
I know we're an exclusive group of people here.
I tried to do the plant exclusive diet, but I couldn't get in.
Oh, we accept everybody, don't we? Okay. Woo. All right. We're celebrating the 10th anniversary edition, which is wonderful. Tell me, what has changed since that book came out?
A lot. So, okay. Well, the first thing that changed was a big mistake I made being—
No mistakes. Learning experiences.
Not mistake. Okay. But all right. Something I could have done better. I did not realize, you know, 10, 11 or 12 years ago when we started writing this, when I was 50 pounds overweight, that I had a food addiction, specifically a sugar addiction. And so I started the recipe section with desserts, with the phrase, life is uncertain, eat dessert first. Well, that was cute and clever, but the reality is, you know, for most people, we don't want to have dessert first. You know, we want to have it in appropriate amounts at appropriate times and not be the first chapter of the recipe section. So one thing we did is we moved it to the end of the book after you ate your healthy soups and stews and salads and entrees, for example. But the other thing we did is I did not yet meet Dr. Alan Goldhammer and Dr. Doug Lyle until the book had come out. And I really didn't understand this concept of calorie density that Glenn and I write about in great detail in our second book together, The Secrets to Ultimate Weight Loss. And so while the recipes in the first edition of Unprocessed were delicious and healthy and really perfect for people transitioning into a vegan or plant exclusive diet or families, for those struggling with weight, a lot of them were really just too high in fat. So we kept the book in its original form because we wanted people to see the recipes, but wherever possible, we found options for people to lower the fat, such as, for example, instead of using nuts in a creamy salad dressing, well, guess what? We can use things like white beans or steamed cauliflower. And in a dessert recipe, instead of using things like nuts, we could use oats. So we gave the versions like that. The other difference, I think, is that we have a new foreword by Dr. John McDougall. So he doesn't like to do that very often, or he doesn't, I don't know if he doesn't like it, but he doesn't often do that. So to me, I'm very proud that his wife, Mary, really likes our book. She has said it many times while she's been on YouTube. So is that about it, Glenn, those three differences, or was there
photographs?
Ooh, probably the most important difference. People wanted color photographs, right?
And who took those photographs?
Oh, gosh, she is so talented, and she's a wonderful cookbook author in her own right. Her name is Hannah Kaminsky.
Yes.
And boy, does she know how to shoot a photo.
Yeah, she started very young, and she's still very young. She's awesome.
Yeah, she's amazing.
I don't want you to feel like you've made any mistakes. I think we're all going along this journey and we're learning together. I started as a vegetarian a long, long time ago and vegan 33 years ago, and I'm continually upgrading and learning and rediscovering. Something I like to say, which your bookmate reminded me of again, is every time I start eliminating food from my diet, my world expands. Somehow, I don't know how that happens, but you start to see things differently. And this whole concept of substituting one for another, I find it tremendously fun to be able to duplicate foods that people like in texture and taste and make it from totally healthy ingredients. And in a world where for the last 70 years or something, we've been moving towards industrial food, and we've been taught as a society that we need to use sugar, oil, salt, and flour to do all these wonderful things. We're kind of going backwards in a way, but we're going forward at the same time. Of any of the recipes, were any of them a particular challenge to change?
Well, some of them we couldn't change. So, especially if it had just a couple of ingredients and one of them was avocado, like in a soup recipe, it was basically corn and avocado and almond milk. What are you going to take? I mean, I guess, yeah. So some of them work because avocado has a unique a property to it, taste and texture that you can't just, you know, get rid of, in my opinion. So yeah, so some of them we didn't even try to change, but I would say also with the salt. So I hadn't met Dr. Goldhammer yet, and I thought SOS free meant you didn't add any salt, but he felt that salt could come from any source and then technically didn't fit his description. Mm-hmm. So we did use a little bit of low sodium miso and low sodium tamari. Now there's actually lower sodium products out there. So for example, instead of soy sauce or even low sodium tamari, they have things like coconut aminos, raw coconut aminos, which is even lower in sodium. And one brand I found that's on Amazon, that was like 25 milligrams. It was ridiculously low in sodium. And so we also gave suggestions for how not to use even a little bit of those products. So I think, you know, sugar, fat, and salt is what people like in recipes. And to try to take all of them out and substitute all of them, at least in the original recipes, that I think sometimes it's easier to just write a new recipe. So it can be a little bit challenging. There was one recipe that we actually took out of the book, of the new book, because we couldn't fix it. And it's because it had alcohol in it. And I had learned since then that it's not really the healthiest thing to eat or to drink. And so we just took it out because we just couldn't find a sub. And I actually asked a few of my talented plant-based chefs, I go, can you fix this? And they're like, can't do it. You know how much Glenn loves alcohol, right, Glenn?
Oh, I love it. And maybe I was drinking too much, but did we mention that there are 30 new recipes?
No, we didn't, which is why I'm so glad you're here.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, 30 new recipes.
How many new recipes did we add?
Yeah, that's right, which is almost like a book or an ebook. We did. So we had a lot of new recipes. And some of those are really good, like the snickerdoodles. Oh boy, those are delicious.
Okay. First recipe in the book, first new recipe. I just want to talk about it. I think it's really clever, but I have to tell you my first knee-jerk reaction. I saw zucchini milk and I went, oh, okay, I get it.
Well, you have to understand, AJ was living in the desert and she wasn't seeing anything green. You want the zucchini milk.
I totally can understand where zucchini milk can fill in baked products and things that require moisture for a lot of different reasons. It has a pretty neutral flavor and I can see it working. It comes with fiber. It's a wonderful food.
Yeah, no, it actually is. And especially, I mean, it's so neutral. That's the cool thing about it. It really is neutral. It doesn't taste really like a vegetable.
I know that I used to try and enjoy zoodles, raw zucchini noodles, and I could never really get into them. I can blanch them. They're just a little too raw. And I was on an all raw diet for 2 years. So, you know, I really worked it. But the only way I could enjoy zucchini noodles back in the day was with a very heavy oil laden pesto, which we don't do anymore.
Right. How did you feel on the raw diet? Because I did it for about 2 years and I mean, I felt great, but I thought it was just so hard to sustain.
You know, it's a funny thing. A lot of people, when they do an all raw diet, they want to move to a tropical place. It's like somehow your whole aura changes and because you're eating fruit. And I fell into that. And I ended up buying 40 acres in Costa Rica, which I have yet to build a house on, but I still have it. But what happened, unfortunately, and I don't know if it's related, it may be, is that towards the end of the 2 years, I was diagnosed with advanced ovarian cancer with a 10 to 20% survival rate. I had this belly growing and I had no idea that there was cancer growing inside. Now, what was the cause of that? There's a lot of different things. My body tells me it's because I used tampons when I was 13 years old and I had very heavy periods to begin with. So I was already starting with a problem when I was a teenager, which I really didn't acknowledge. But on a raw diet, I was eating like whole watermelons and I was getting a lot of extra sugar, even though it was fruit sugar. So I felt really good until I didn't feel good, but I don't know if it was a raw diet. That's my answer.
A whole watermelon. I've eaten a whole watermelon, not in one sitting, but in one day.
It's fun. Especially when it's hot out. Okay. Speaking of alcohol, tell me about vanilla powder.
Yeah. I think it's like the best ingredient in the whole world if you're going to do sweet recipes. Before I met Dr. Goldhammer, I was using alcohol-free vanilla in my cooking and baking because I was a pastry chef at Sante Restaurant, a vegan pastry chef in Los Angeles for about 5 years. And because it was a large celebrity clientele at that restaurant, we couldn't use regular vanilla extract because of even the small amount of alcohol for people in rehab, it's not allowed. And so everything was fine. And then when I went to start teaching at True North, Dr. Goldhammer says, you can't use this because it has glycerin and that's sugar. And I'm like, oh boy, what am I going to do? And so, you know, vanilla beans are extremely expensive. Vanilla is actually the second most expensive spice in the world, second only to saffron. And that was getting really expensive. So I found you could make something called vanilla water by simply blending vanilla beans with water. And it lasted in the fridge about 3 weeks, but you'd have to kind of use a lot to get that flavor. And I'm not sure where I actually first heard of it. Actually, it's vanilla bean powder because there's a difference. You can go to the regular grocery store and find this white powder called vanilla powder. A company named Cook's, I believe, makes it. And that's got sugar in it. That's not the true vanilla beans. Mm. Vanilla bean powder, it's kind of expensive. But you don't need a lot because it's potent and it's really just the ground vanilla beans. And if once people start using it, they'll realize that you don't get that flavor from the extract, whether it's alcohol-free or sugar-free, it's mostly water. I mean, you know, vanilla extracts are basically flavored water, whereas the vanilla bean powder, it's like the true essence of vanilla. So it really does make a difference. And I don't like having people to have to go buy ingredients, especially if they're a little bit expensive, but man, if you want it to taste good, especially, you know, when you're not using sugar, you know, skimp on other areas like haircuts, but not on vanilla powder.
Skimp on haircuts.
Yeah. Let your hair grow. Okay. That's what I'm thinking I'm going to skimp on.
Let's just talk about sweeteners for a minute. And you touch on this in the book. I just hear and read about everybody's favorite sweetener and their romantic notions about how certain sweeteners are healthy and wonderful. What's the truth?
Glenn, you want to take it? You want me to take it? Because we do know the truth.
Well, I'll just say that the sweetener of choice that I use is dates if I'm having something sweet.
Yep. We believe in the fruit, the whole fruit, and nothing but the whole fruit. So help us God. You know, people want to argue that their oil is the best or their sugar is the best or the salt is the best. But the reality is oil is oil, sugar is sugar, salt and salt. And depending on what type of diet you're following, I would say that none of them are very health promoting unless they're in the form that they were found in nature. So in other words, if you want fat, eat whole food fat, nuts, seeds, avocado, preferably raw and unroasted. If you want salt, go to the source of the salt, the green leafy vegetables. If you want sugar, go to fruit. You know, it's interesting because I hadn't yet read The Pleasure Trap when Unprocessed was written, but I had then found out that these pathways, whenever we eat, we stimulate the production of a neurotransmitter called dopamine that makes, you know, us feel good. And that's why people eat in general, but sugar, fat, and salt, they hyperactivate the dopamine pathways. And as Dr. Goldhammer says, fool the brain satiety mechanisms cause people to become addicted and overeat. We weren't meant to activate these pathways at the same time. There's no food in nature that has sugar, fat, and salt in it. There's none that have sugar and fat or sugar and salt or fat and salt. And this is what processed food and restaurant food basically is. And so while you could argue that maybe some sweeteners are less bad, none of them are really, really health promoting when they're processed. And I agree with Glenn, dates would be my preferred sweetener or really any fruit, because, you know, when you have a ripe banana, you can make cakes and things and muffins with that. Even without dates, they're so sweet. Sweet potatoes, when you roast them, you can use them in brownie recipes. So I say whatever sweetener comes from nature that you haven't stripped all the fiber and nutrients from, that would get my vote.
I don't count calories, but I was just thinking while I was reading your book that a teaspoon of sugar is 16 calories. And that's like not a lot, but who wants to just eat a teaspoon of sugar? Number one. And number two, nobody ever just gets a teaspoon of sugar. It's usually like five or more in a glass of Coke or a bottle of Coke, whatever. And then compare it with a medjool date, which I love, which is about 60 calories. And if I have a date, I'll usually have two, and then I am stuffed. So I can't even eat anymore, even if I want to. That's 120 calories plus fiber and all kinds of other goodies. You just can't compare.
Yeah. Well, also, you know, you think about it, yes, dates are high in sugar, but the sugar is mitigated by the fact that it's a whole food that has fiber and water and vitamins and minerals and phytochemicals and antioxidants and micronutrients. And when you eat the sugar in fruit in its whole form, you actually can experience some satiety from all those other things I just mentioned. But when you have processed sugar, it behaves more drug-like than food-like. Not only is it high in the glycemic index, it's not everybody, it's not a problem for everybody, but for a lot of people, it really is.
All right, I picked out a few recipes I wanted to talk about. Other than the zucchini milk, there is cinnamon bun milk, which was like the next recipe. And I thought that looks totally yum. And such a crazy thing when we go through an airport or we pass one of those cinnamon bun stores that's filled with all that aroma. And that's like a gazillion calories and not good for us. But something like this is like the same, but different.
Yep. It's good. You know, kind of reminds me of the Cinnabon, you know, when you go to the airport.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm talking about. But that's like loaded with things we don't want to put in our bodies. Okay, the next thing I want to do is like do a praise for walnuts. So the amazing thing when you blend a walnut is it gets oily. But it's okay because it's a walnut, which is a whole food, and you blend it up and it's got all these other things. But I've always noticed when I blend a walnut and mix it with some other things, it's oily. And you have a lot of lovely recipes with walnuts. One of them reminds me of my mother's vegan chopped liver recipe, which is with string beans, but this is the power pâté made with peas.
Yeah, and that's from a mutual friend of Glenn and I, Michelle Wolf. It was a recipe, a submission, and it really does taste like chopped liver, and it looks like chopped liver.
And I think there are walnuts in the hearty lentil loaf, right? But there's an option to use mushrooms.
Mushrooms, yeah.
Both yummy. Yeah, the thing about caramelized onions, which you tell us in the book you can do without oil.
You can.
Is that they're so flavorful.
Onion is really a game changer. I feel bad for people that are like on a low FODMAP diet forever, can't have onion and garlic because we're not using a salt oil. Onions are just like the foundation, in my opinion, of food, of recipes that aren't dessert recipes, that is.
I agree. Okay, the other one I wanted to bring up, I like really simple things. Sweet potato croutons.
Yeah, those are fun. I like to put them on things. And, you know, for people that are too lazy to cut the sweet potato up, every store now has, you know, cube sweet potatoes in the refrigerated section. And basically either air fry them or bake them or roast them. And you got these like awesome little cubes that you can, you know, put on other recipes or on salads. They're quite a bit of fun.
Very good. Now, why do we want to eat unprocessed? This is a loaded question. And Glenn, you might give your perspective as well as Chef AJ.
Well, because we want to eat as close to nature as we can.
Why?
Why?
You know the reason. I just want to hear it from you.
I believe that humans evolved. So if we evolved, we want to eat a diet that is consistent with evolution, consistent with the animals that we are closest to. You won't find a lot of chimpanzees eating graham crackers. You could look, but they're hard to find. So they eat leaves, salad. They eat fruits like figs. I think it's monkeys that will eat sweet potatoes, right? So you want to eat close to nature. And when we run scientific studies, it always seems to turn out that when you eat closest to nature, people do the best. So it's just intuitive as far as I'm concerned, that you want to eat whole foods.
I was leading you and you didn't bite to the environment because you've written so much on the climate.
Oh, that. Yeah. Well, you know, the book Food is Climate is particularly about animal agriculture. Processed foods, if you take a processed plant food, like a cracker, presuming that it doesn't have dairy in it or something, but, you know, there I'm saying eat unprocessed, you know, eat the whole grain, eat the rice rather than the rice cake, right? But in terms of destroying the environment, it's animal agriculture that you got to, that we shouldn't support, and we shouldn't buy their products, and we have to stop them. They're destroying the world far more than the processed plant food people.
I mean, why would it ever be beneficial for somebody to eat a food that their species didn't evolve eating? I mean, you know, processed food is very affordable. It's socially acceptable. It's readily available. But I don't consider it food. And I think one of the mistakes made is that we even call it food because it's food-like, but I don't really consider it food because if the purpose of food is to sustain life and to nurture, I mean, I guess you could get enough. It's just, you know, it was after World War II, when the country became more affluent and women were going back to work and PTA meetings and such, that's when you really started seeing processed food, you know, show up in the stores. And if you read books like Michael Moss's Salt, Sugar, and Fat, How the Food Giants Hooked Us, or The End of Overeating by the former head of the FDA, Dr. David Kessler, what you'll learn is that even though the companies knew that sugar, fat, and salt was addictive and they were creating the hyper-palatable product that would create a bliss point in people's brain, they never really created it with the expectation that this would be the sole food source for most Americans. And now Americans eat something like 67% or more of their calories from processed food. I know vegans, ethical vegans, they eat 100% of their calories from vegan processed food. And, you know, I always like the saying that if there's a problem, look to nature. And we have an epidemic in our world, but our country too, of obesity and heart disease. And it's really because we're not eating what our species was intended to eat. And there are millions of species on the planet, but only three have ever been overweight: humans and their domesticated dogs and their domesticated cats. Because if you go anywhere in nature, you don't see an overweight gazelle or an overweight elephant or an overweight tiger, because they are eating the food that their species evolved to eat. And we evolved to eat whole foods. Did our ancestors eat some animal products? Yes. But nobody throughout all of human history until the recent timeline ate processed food. It's not food. And I remember many years ago, I saw this thing on the Huffington Post. It was a graduate student's work where she had people swallow these cameras where they could, you know, record the digestion. It was actually, you could probably still find it. It's called From Mouth to Anus. Mm-hmm. And what she discovered is that when she fed people food, like she would make food herself. Like, for example, she would make like a ramen noodle dish and she would make the food herself. Digestion happened as normal. But when she fed people like the typical college meal, like some Gatorade and some ramen noodles, it was as if the stomach didn't know what to do and got confused. It's a really fascinating thing. So we have maybe adapted that we can survive, not thrive, on processed food. But we're really not meant to eat it, in at least not in any discernible amount that we are eating it in now. So I got so angry when I read these books, realizing that the processed food industry purposely hijacked our brain chemistry for their products, is that pretty much since about 2008, I make exceptions, obviously. Well, not obviously, but I'll buy some condiments. I mean, I will buy condiments. That's technically processed. I'll buy beans in a can or tomatoes in a can, but I really don't eat processed food or recommend that people feed it to their children.
And I'd like to point out that if you swallow a camera, that's also a processed food. That's not.
Not if the camera was found in nature.
But I'm pumped. Yeah. Well, I know that a number of us are frustrated because we feel like the vegan movement has been co-opted and I know myself, I can't speak for anyone else, but in the early days of this vegan movement, the food was relatively healthy. You know, we joke about brown rice and steamed vegetables, but that's good food.
Yeah.
It's food.
It's food. And now there are so many alternatives and there's so much money being invested in processed vegan foods. It's like, what happened?
Right. And it's almost always with coconut oil. Who anointed coconut oil? I mean, it has more saturated fat than a lot of animal products.
Yeah, or palm oil. I'm always reading disastrous articles about palm oil, what it's doing to the land and how it's exploiting Native peoples and their environment. And somehow the foods that we're using to make a lot of these processed foods not only aren't healthy, but they're very exploitive.
Yeah.
Yep. To people, animals, and the planet.
Absolutely. One of the things when Glenn and I were even in the early stages of the first book we're discussing is that kind of our litmus test is the food found in nature and can you make it in your own kitchen with a reasonable amount of skill, you know? And I don't know anyone that can make maple syrup or agave, but anyone could make date syrup. You could take some dates and soak them and blend them or boil them down. You could do that. And I do that.
I do that.
Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, it's the same thing. Can anyone really, you know, go tap a maple tree and extract, what is it, like 20 gallons of maple sap that ends up becoming 1 gallon of maple syrup? I mean, maybe if that's your industry, you could. Can anyone make olive oil? You could take an orange and squeeze it and have orange juice, but you really can't make olive oil. I don't know anybody that can make coconut oil. I know very few people that can open a coconut. You know, I went to culinary school and man, we spent a day learning how to open them. And even it is very, very difficult. Very difficult.
That's funny. I can open a coconut, but we need tools or a very hard surface.
Right. So this is why I don't get these paleo people. How did our ancestors eat coconut oil, which is on their plan or keto? They had no tools. How did they open the coconuts?
Very good question. I've got a question. How do you do a video every day?
It's my job. And that's also my passion. So yeah, I didn't intend for the show to be every day, but when you get as many requests as I do, if you don't do it every day, you're never going to catch up. And I'm always 4 to 6 months behind of people that want to be on the show. Plus almost every guest wants to come back and I don't like to say no to people, but it's fun. I mean, it's just kind of like, how do you exercise every day? You just build it into your schedule and you just do it.
Very good. I skipped one question and that was, how do you make your sun-dried tomato product?
So now you can actually buy it. So when the first unprocessed came out, a lot of these products didn't exist, but now not every grocery store has it, but every spice shop. So spice shops are places like Penzi's, Local Spicery, Savory Spice. There's quite a few of them depending on where you live. And they actually sell either tomato powder or sun-dried tomato powder, which adds so much flavor to food without salt. You could make your own. You have to get the sun-dried tomatoes that are not the soft ones that have a little bit of sulfur dioxide to keep them soft, or the ones that are packed in oil, but you can get the really hard ones at the grocery store. Usually the company Melissa's Foods have them, or sometimes they're in bulk, and you put them in a high powered blender or a coffee grinder, and then you have tomato powder, and it really bumps up the flavor of any savory dish.
I've used tomato powder and I like it a lot, but I haven't made my own, and it's hard to find the right kind of dried tomatoes.
Right. I like the one, I just buy it now from Local Spicery. So it's very good and a little goes a long way.
Mm-hmm. The easiest thing I think, or the best things, are the dessert. I can understand why you put them first in your first book. And all the ones that you have in your book, I think can be eaten at any time of the day because they're made from whole foods, right?
Absolutely.
And this is something that I picked up when I was focusing on a raw diet, because the raw food desserts are probably the best because you're just using fruits and nuts, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Whole foods.
And they're just, and some of them are just amazingly sweet. Yeah. So your best desserts in the book, your favorites, all of them.
Ooh, okay. Best and favorite are sometimes two different things. Okay. gosh, I think all the desserts are good because they come from a background of being a pastry chef. I'm gonna my book to tell you, you know, because that is a really hard question. Okay, so we got to break it down into chocolate and non-chocolate. And the reason is, Karen, chocolate can't compete against non-chocolate. It really can't. They got to be their own categories.
Okay.
But I got to say, if you really are a chocolate lover, you know that chocolate goes really well with peanut butter. And there's two recipes that are chocolate peanut butter in the book. One is really easy to make, the peanut butter fudge truffles that continue to be a fan favorite. One is a little bit more difficult, but really fun. It was named for Dr. Esselstyn, the hockey pucks. It's just basically peanuts or peanut butter and dates and cocoa. They're just different variations. But for the non-chocolate desserts, cherry cobbler stood the test of time, and we were able to update it into a lower fat version simply by the streusel topping that contained walnuts and dates and cinnamon and nutmeg, simply by using oats, and it's just as good. So I'm going to vote for that. Glenn, have you tried any of the desserts?
Mint chocolate mousse torte.
Yeah, that is good.
The mint chocolate mousse, or is that another one?
Mint chocolate mousse torte.
Yeah, that's my vote. Yeah. I'm a mint chocolate fan.
Yeah, it's really good. Kind of reminds me of a Frango mint pie I had as a child in Chicago. It was called Frango Mints, and from Marshall Fields, which no longer exists.
I know I didn't want to talk about your early history, but I did want to just mention the Easy Bake Oven.
I love that thing. 7 years old. I was baking cakes when I was 7. That was really easy. How does a light bulb make a cake? I could still not figure that out today. I wonder if they still make the Easy Bake Oven.
I was always fascinated by it. We never got one, and I had to wait until we went to this dear friend's house and we could make our little cakes. But just interesting things that our culture brings to us and teaches us from very young.
Yeah, that was a really fun toy, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, is there an easy bake version of a Chef AJ unprocessed recipe?
Yeah, because a lot of the recipes are raw, and like you say, here's like the easiest recipe. It's like 3 ingredients that many people might already have in their pantry. 4 if you want to add vanilla or vanilla powder. So there's 2 versions, the low fat and the regular, the brownies that are raw, walnuts, cocoa powder, dates, boom, in the food processor. Don't want to use walnuts, do oats, just as delicious. You either roll them into balls, press them in a pan. They have these little silicone pans that are like brownie shape. So easy. And there's no baking there whatsoever.
Yum. All right, Glenn. Chef AJ, anything you want to add to this conversation?
AJ?
Well, just that, you know, just do your best to eat as many fruits and vegetables as you can. And I think that will start you on the trajectory towards better health. And, you know, it's the kindest way to eat, plant exclusive vegan. You know, you're not only helping your own health and your appearance, but you are really being kind to animals and the planet. So, you know, the more plants you can eat, I think the more the world will thank you.
I think if people are transitioning off the standard American diet, I like to recommend that you just start with simple meals. You know, just eat sweet potatoes and beans and rice and simple meals. Eat like a monk for a while, and then get the 10th anniversary edition of Unprocessed, and then you realize, you know, the whole wide range of flavors and delectable meals that you can have. But you start by making your palate satisfied with simplicity, and then everything's easier.
And then our recipes are like quite gourmet, like the disappearing lasagna.
Very good. Okay. I just thought of another question. I'm going to let you go soon, but I wanted to know, what's your favorite new appliance?
Oh, gosh.
And new is relative. Okay.
Right. Well, okay. Because 2 things came to my head at the same time. One was the Nutrimilk machine and one was the Breville air fryer. So I've actually had them both for quite a while now, but you know, I lived, you know, 60 years without an air fryer or a Nutrimilk milk. But it's like when you get these machines, you save so much time making things that I love them, because also things taste so good in the air fryer. You can get really crisp fries. You can make roasted or air fried vegetables. It's quicker than the oven and it makes things delicious. But the Nutrimilk is really cool because you can make your own plant milks with zero waste. So some of the other machines, which are less expensive, you have all that pulp, which you could either throw out or make something with, but it's where all the nourishment is in the pulp. But the Nutrimilk makes a whole food milk. And also my husband is quite slender and needs to eat a lot of nut butter. And I was tired of all those plastic jars, so I can make him his own nut butter in like minutes. And it's pretty cool.
Wow. So what is the milk like? Is it thicker?
It's thicker, so it's going to have more fat and more calories, because you think about it, if you buy a boxed almond milk, well, the reason it says 30 calories is because it's like the vanilla.
Because there's nothing in it.
it's almond water. So it's richer too. So especially like if I'm making a soup or something, it's much richer. But of course you can always control the richness by how much water you put in with either the oat or the walnut or whatever, you know, the seed that you're making it. But it's a fun machine, and I've been having a lot of fun using it.
Glenn?
Well, on your appliance question, your listeners may be interested to know that I got a new vacuum cleaner.
Where you can clean up all your food messes.
Yeah. So that's been helpful.
Okay. And what kind did you get?
I don't remember the brand. I got it at Target.
Okay. Very good. Well, I am like really behind, and I recently picked up an Instant Pot only because I'm traveling and it is my favorite companion in the hotel.
Yeah. Oh, I you know, the Instant Pot too. It's been so long since I've been using one. I don't think of it as a new appliance, but right. I use my Instant Pot every day.
Okay. Things we cannot live without.
Well, things we can't live without are our pets. That's for sure.
I'm a petless person. It's okay. It's by choice. I love animals in their own habitat. That's cool. I'm not going to say any more about that. I'm glad you love the animals that you choose to be with, as many people do. I just wish that we were kind to all beings on this planet.
Amen.
Thank you so much, Glenn and Chef AJ, for joining me today on It's All About Food. It's great to see you both look fabulous. And I know why.
Because we went unprocessed.
There you go.
Thank you,
Karen. Take care and be well.
To say eating unprocessed is important is an understatement. Is so much behind unprocessed food. In fact, it's just like talking about conventional food versus organic food. Conventional food is really industrial food. It's not conventional. There's nothing conventional about it. It's food that is not natural. It is food with residues of toxic chemicals. Biocides, if you remember, I'm calling pesticides and herbicides biocides. They kill. We call food that isn't industrial, we call food that are minimally processed and whole. In this case, we're calling it unprocessed because Chef AJ's book is called Unprocessed. But I like to take the positive spin rather than the negative with the un in it by saying minimally processed or whole foods. Foods that are fresh, that come out of the ground, that are harvested, brought to market, and are consumed within a relatively short amount of time from being harvested. And that really should be the goal of all of us, to have our food available, local, harvested, and then we're able to access it relatively fresh so that it has the nutrients we need, the abundance of nutrients to nourish us. But now most of the foods that people eat today, especially in this country, are industrialized, highly processed, filled with artificial chemicals, stabilizers, preservatives, things that should not be put in the human body. And we're suffering the consequences. So I say again that eating unprocessed is so important. And not only is it important for our individual health, I was trying to get Glenn to expand a little bit more on how it impacts our environment, because it certainly does. We use a lot of farmland to grow plants to make sugars, a variety of sugars, cane sugar and beet sugars. And there's corn, and you know the story behind corn. Corn is used not only to make high fructose corn syrup, but corn has been elevated now to make fuel. And there's so many complicated political problems behind the simple stalk of corn. Is it genetically modified? Is it organic? We have crops being grown for sweeteners, beet sugar, cane sugar, corn for high fructose corn syrup. These are being grown for processed foods. These are being grown to add to industrialized foods, either the sweet treats or some of the savory foods. Everything has sugar in it nowadays. And growing these crops are done in a way that they damage the environment. They're monocropped. They're grown with biocides and petrochemical fertilizers. They're not grown sustainably or organically. They're damaging the soil. And along with these foods, we're also growing lots of grain like wheat that is not organic and is grown with biocides in a manner that is not organic or sustainable. And we do it so that we can create more processed foods, more cookies and cakes and breads and snack foods. So while they're not nurturing us, while we're feeding on them with what are considered empty calories, we're also degrading the soil and damaging our water and air at the same time. I don't know how it affects you, but I know that I get really, really excited when I go to a farmer's market, when I see fresh produce, typically at a farmer's market, or maybe in a supermarket that has a really beautiful display of colorful, fresh, alive produce. But the store does not have to be particularly large for me to get a particular thrill out of looking for produce. I've shopped all over the world in all different kinds of markets, outdoor markets, small grocery stores, shopping centers. You know, I love food and there's always something to discover in any of these stores. But I want to share an experience that I had this week where I went to a grocery store that left me depressed. And I'm still trying to figure out what it was. I'm trying to put my finger on what it was that disturbed me. Maybe we can figure this out together. So I was at a store called Aldi. Are you familiar with the Aldi markets? I was in Janesville, Wisconsin last week. I was going to a Best Buy to get a new battery for my phone. I'm trying to hold on to my aging iPhone, and it needed a new battery. And it was going to take an hour. I thought I would make the use of my time. I went and bought some gas for the car, and I knew I needed a few things at the grocery store. If you've heard this program in the last few weeks, you know I've been staying in Fort Atkinson, Wisconsin. I'm working as an understudy in a musical, and I go to the local Pick and Save in Fort Atkinson where I've been able to find the really basic organic produce that I'm interested in. Leafy greens, berries, and I get excited if there's anything else that I can get, like an avocado or potato or an onion, sometimes celery, but I've been eating well. I needed some berries and some greens. I went into the store and it wasn't a big grocery store, this Aldi's. As I said, you may be familiar with Aldi. It is an international brand. There are stores all over the world, as well as on the East Coast, the Midwest, and in California and Arizona, I believe. They have many stores. They're continuing to open them. I don't know if I've ever been in an Aldi market before, but I walked into this one, and what was it? It was relatively small. Maybe five aisles. Everything was boxed or prepackaged. So the produce was the first aisle I went down. And it was really just surrounded by a lot of cardboard cartons with things in them. And then prepackaged produce. Fortunately, I was able to find my organic greens and reasonably priced organic berries. This was great. But there was something lonely. There was something industrial, sterile. I'm still trying to figure it out. There weren't many people in the store. So there were a few people at the registers. How many registers were there? Maybe four. So it was a lonely moment in this grocery store. Now, Is it because it was around 6 o'clock on a weekday and maybe everybody in Janesville sits down for dinner with their family? I don't know. I come from a city where it's full of people everywhere at any time of the day. So there was something really deserted about this space. And I walked through the rest of the aisles because I had time. And I'm always curious, as I mentioned before, to see what I find in any grocery store. It's making me actually think of a few weeks ago when I was doing my laundry in Fort Atkinson. It was right by this Mexican grocery store, La Tienda Mexicana. I had a great time in that store while waiting for my laundry to be done. I felt like I was in Mexico. Everything was in Spanish. Most of the products, I think, were from Mexico. The brands, the produce was the kind of products you would find in Mexico and less likely here in the United States unless you were in a Mexican grocery store. Anyway, I had a great time and I was practicing my Spanish and my thoughts and reading the labels. It was a wonderful experience. I didn't find vegan foods and I didn't find organic foods. It was just fun, culturally. Fun with food. In Janesville at this Aldi market, I was looking for some culture, maybe some art, some care that had gone into the store to make it interesting. I didn't find any of that. I walked down the aisle and it was a depressing selection of food, sugary cereals and sodas. I don't even know what was there because it wasn't what I was interested in buying. I did notice in the last aisle, in the cold case, there were some plant milks, like a Silk milk and some other brands. Nothing that I was interested in because if you know me, I only buy organic and unsweetened soy milk made with soybeans and water, which is next to impossible to find anywhere. And they did have some vegan ice creams. And I thought, okay, there's something nice about this to know that even in a small town like this that does not seem very vegan friendly, there are vegan products available, and there's probably some vegans around here that are doing their best and happy to find an occasional treat in a little store like this. But still, it left me sad. Now, I've been in other stores where a majority of the produce is prepackaged, like Trader Joe's, for example. I don't like to buy a lot of produce in Trader Joe's for that reason. Trader Joe's has something else going on for it. It has its own culture and vibe and a certain level of excitement because people feel like they're getting special products, either healthy products, natural products, at a reasonable price. Just kind of a fun energy there. Now, just a few weeks ago, I went to the local farmers market in Fort Atkinson, and I have to admit that kind of depressed me too. So before I had come to Fort Atkinson, when I knew I was going to be working here, I went online to see what options were available for organic produce, and I knew there was going to be a farmer's market opening in Maine. I was really looking forward to it, and it turns out the location of this market was very close to the house I was staying in, and I walked there one Saturday morning before one of our matinee performances, and there were only a few vendors, and I think there was only one that had produce, and the produce was like asparagus. It wasn't like a selection. It was one item. Maybe there was another item. There was a vendor that had pickles and another vendor had honey. There was one with clothing. There was a group that represented some community organization. Where was the food? Where was the produce? I wasn't really expecting organic produce. I was hopeful, but I was expecting produce. It was a farmer's market. So maybe it was too early in the season. I don't know. I'm going to hope that maybe later in the season, the small farmers market in Fort Atkinson will have more representation by farmers with produce. But it's concerning. It's concerning because we need to be eating produce. We need to be eating fresh fruits and vegetables. We need to be eating unprocessed whole foods, minimally processed. But there's another piece of it, and that is public markets. Public markets bring people together. There's something fun and exciting about it. And I think even though a lot of supermarkets we go to are enclosed, this particular supermarket I went to was so desolate. I don't know about you, but I, as I mentioned before, I get excited when I see fresh food. I like going to spice markets where you can see baskets of beautiful colors and you can smell the aromas. We're supposed to do this. We're supposed to enjoy the aromas of foods and herbs and spices because these are the things we're supposed to consume. We need to be attracted to them. And unfortunately today with processed food, the colors that we're attracted to are not real colors in a lot of these foods. They're unnatural colors and they're put in the food because colors appeal to us. And maybe some of my disappointment had to do with the fact that Gary was supposed to visit me last week. We canceled his trip because I got COVID. Yep. Now, fortunately, my case of COVID has been very mild. I just had a little fatigue for a couple of days and really not much else. But we decided it would be best for him not to take a trip while there were some cases popping up. But we had made some plans, and I was kind of disappointed that we didn't get to act on them. And perhaps there'll be another opportunity sometime to do some of these things. But I was going to pick him up in Milwaukee at the Milwaukee airport, and then we were going to get a quick dinner at a place called On the Bus, which is an all-vegan quick service restaurant located inside of the Milwaukee Public Market in Milwaukee's historic Third Ward neighborhood. Are you familiar with the Milwaukee Public Market? I've never been there. When I was looking for a place on a Monday night to find vegan food in Milwaukee, and I found On the Bus, and then I realized where it was located, I was very excited to be able to visit this public market in a historic location. And of course, we didn't get to go, and maybe I'll get to go sometime. In talking about supermarkets and markets and this store I recently went in that was depressing, talking about a public market is really exciting. That's one of the reasons why I wanted to see it, because I love places like this, either when they're outdoors or when they're in a big space like this public market is in Milwaukee. It's a gathering place. It's a place, whether you know the people or not, you get this bustling environment, people looking at the different artisanal products, things that aren't industrial. I just find this very inspiring. I'd like to know more about the Milwaukee Public Market. As I read about it, it says it's a downtown neighborhood gathering place, and they have a mission of giving back. Community support is an integral part of their identity and a founding principle since their inception. They work with local charities and other nonprofits to help further their missions for the betterment of every child and resident in the city. They have a Market on a Mission grant, and it's issued annually to a group or organization working to provide health, social, and educational services to local youth and other underserved individuals throughout Milwaukee. And that's exciting. And then it makes me think of the Ferry Building Marketplace in San Francisco. Okay, San Francisco is just a beautiful city, but the Ferry Building Marketplace, Gary and I did a video on it some years ago. It's just another place where vendors sell produce and coffees and teas, different prepared food. It's in a beautiful, restored 1898 space. And you just can't help but love being in an environment like that, which is related to food, but also related to a planned space to bring community together and to enjoy carefully made artisanal products. I'm going to wrap this up by just saying not only is it important to eat whole foods, minimally processed, unprocessed foods, like we talked about with Chef AJ and Glenn Mercer on this program, celebrating the 10th anniversary of their book, Unprocessed. But marketplaces, public market, and grocery stores and supermarkets that provide an atmosphere that is welcoming to the community and offers fresh, healthy produce to sustain us is so important, along with all the workers that are involved in bringing all of that food to us, the farmers, the farm workers, the essential workers that are involved from start to finish in bringing food from seed to the variety of plant foods that are available to us to enjoy. Thank you. I want to thank you for listening today. I'm Karen Hartglass, your host of It's All About Food. You can find me at responsibleeatingandliving.com. Send me your comments and questions at info@realmeals.org. Most important, have a delicious week.